Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, July 31st, 2016. This is episode 1310. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about technology, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, virtual reality, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach us by Skype. It should be toll free. Or similar, you know, any voice over the internet product. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website is techguylabs.com. So the time has come for Windows 10. Did you upgrade? Did you try to upgrade for free yesterday and were you shocked that it's now $120? Microsoft said, they said after July 29th, we're going to charge you. It's not free anymore. It was free for 1 year. That confused a lot of people. A lot of people didn't understand what free for a year meant. I think some thought, oh, that means they'll after we upgrade, they'll charge us. No, if you've already upgraded in that first year, if you took advantage of the free upgrade, here's the good news. That computer, the one you upgraded, that's it. It's done. It's forevermore will be up to date because not only did Microsoft promise the last version of Windows. They're just going to update it every two or three times every year from now on. They even require it. Maybe you didn't notice. You didn't read that 18-page document that you had to agree to before you could use it. Well, in there it says you must take updates. And you're going to get your first one. We're all going to get our first one in a couple of days. Tuesday, they say, August 2nd. What they call the anniversary update, the first big update to Windows 10. Even if you just installed it, you'll be getting that. It isn't too late to roll back, however. You have 31 days after the upgrade to roll back. Probably this would be a good time to let you know that even if you roll back, you will still have an activated, usable copy of Windows 10 anytime you want. You just download it and install it, and that computer is, you know, Microsoft's memorized your computer and activated it. And if you go back to Windows 7, it'll be activated too. It'll be fine. So you could even do a dual boot if you wanted. So you're good. You're golden. Some of you will still see a invitation to upgrade to Windows 10. Apparently that isn't going away right away. That's going to take them some time to turn off. I'm not clear on why that is. Why they didn't just put a little time bomb in the program and said, hey, after July 29th, stop bugging people. They didn't, apparently. But you might be surprised if you accept the upgrade invitation that they ask you for a credit card and $120. So I think if you didn't upgrade, you made your bed. Now you have to sleep in it. You're going to stick with whatever version of Windows you're using. If you did, good on you. I think it's fine. I think it's good. I don't think it's compellingly better than Windows 7 was. I think it is better than Windows 8. It fixed the issues with Windows 8, I think. The advantage of it is it's not going to expire. You're kind of now on the fast track to Windows heaven. It's just going to stay that way forever. This is, you know, not really new. This is what Apple's been doing for years. Apple has offered, I think for the last at least 5 or 6 years, free upgrades to its operating system every year. They still call it by new names, the current version, OS X El Capitan, the captain. And soon we're going to get OS X Sierra. It's coming out in the fall. And those will continue to be free. So that's it. The major operating systems, and Linux has always been free, the major operating systems are free now. Why, you might ask? Why would they give that away? Well, they aren't really giving it away. If you're getting a new computer, you're paying for it. If you decide to upgrade an old computer, you're paying for it. And most importantly, business users are paying for it. They never got a free upgrade. But so it didn't, I don't think, hit the Microsoft's bottom line particularly, but it is kind of the way of the world going forward. Does it really matter? I've noticed this. I think it's one of the reasons I moved most of my computers now either to Linux or to another version of Unix called FreeBSD, because it doesn't matter what you use anymore. It doesn't matter. It's a very little difference because most of what we do is now through a browser. In fact, it's why you can use and get away with Chrome OS, which is just a browser. You can't install applications on Chrome OS. You can just install browser extensions because that's, for most people, all you need, just browsing, internet, email, you know, home shopping, that kind of thing. What else are you doing? You know, photo organization and editing. Well, that you can do that in the cloud. If you're a professional or a serious photographer, well, you might want to download software, and that means you might use Windows or Mac for that, or Linux. But mostly what we do now is in the cloud, and I think Microsoft has clearly seen that. They call themselves a devices and services business. Devices and services, that's their business. I don't even, you almost have to parse that carefully to even figure out what it is. But if you go to Microsoft.com and you look at the title bar on your browser, you know, that's what it says. We're a devices and services business.
Hmm.
Okay. Devices are the laptops and the tablets that Microsoft sells. I guess the phones, you'd have to include those. Services are, well, cloud services, but now I think Windows is a service. Windows is a service, it's not something that comes in a box you install from disks. It's a service. It gets updated. It's possible they'll start charging you a monthly fee for the service like they do for Office 365, but I don't think so, because it's a service that's kind of the fundamental layer that lets you do everything else, and that's what empowers you to buy all that other stuff from Microsoft. It's a service that goes before all the others. So I think they figure, we'll make money on it in indirectly, just like Apple does. You don't pay for the operating system on your phone. That's what's happened, by the way. I think a lot of what we have started to think of computing as being these days comes from the fact that our primary computing experience is a mobile experience, is on a phone. And so regular updates, automatic updates, free operating system. You pay for the hardware and you get the operating system. That's part of the deal. It's automatically updated when the next version of Android comes out. I don't expect to pay for it. That'd be crazy. If Google said, hey, we're going to charge you for Android 7, people would go, what? No. And Google doesn't want to, because they want everybody to update for security reasons, for compatibility reasons, to encourage developers to improve their software, their apps. And Microsoft's the same thing. Really, what's happened on desktop computing and laptop computing it's turning into mobile computing. So I think that's why everything is changing. It's all about the cloud. Even with your smartphone, the apps are just a gateway to services on the internet, right? For the most part. Look at Pokemon Go. What's wrong with Pokemon Go? The servers are always down. Because you can't play the game without the internet. 8888 Ask Leo. And that's why I think, if you've ever toyed with the idea of Linux, a free operating system, I mean, you don't need one because you've got a free operating system now. But have you ever toyed with it? An operating system that's not owned by a big company, that doesn't spy on you, that doesn't, coerce you into upgrades and things like that? This might be the time, because truthfully, my experience with Linux now, whether it's Ubuntu or Debian, the two big flavors of Linux, it's just like any other system. It's just a gateway to cloud services, which is what you care about. Let's talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. Your questions, your comments, your suggestions, your thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Kim Schaffer's here to answer the phones, and we will get things underway right after this. Kim Schaffer is here, answering the phones.
A fruity beverage.
I know. I got some rum. I got some rum.
Well, yeah, we've got plenty of that.
Yeah, 3 weeks. So John, our studio manager, just came in and said, did you know it's 3 weeks from today we'll be moving? And he's all jolly about it, and I'm sad. We've been in this studio for 5 years, built it at great expense with great love and devotion and innovation and cleverness from our team, and they just really did a fabulous job. And John said, you know, I was on the ladder this morning, you know, taking stuff down and kind of teared up a little bit, thinking about all the memories we have in here.
I'm totally going to cry when we leave.
I am. Beautiful place.
I've been through so many moves for work.
I know.
To have to deal with another one.
this is the last one. So we built this studio. It's not just a radio studio. In fact, it's mostly a television studio. Right. So it's big. It's several thousand square feet big because we do, even of this show, we do video all the time. And we do a whole podcast network out of here. And so it's something like 25 shows, and they're all video, like television shows. You can find them at twit.tv if you want to see what the old place looked like. And then, the building, we didn't own the building. I didn't want to buy the building. It was a little overpriced, and commercial real estate isn't necessarily a great investment, at least not in small towns like this. Downtown New York, probably a great investment. L.A., great investment, not in Petaluma. So somebody else bought it and decided to turn this 20,000 square foot facility we're in right now into a brewery. They're going to make beer.
Which is sort of exciting.
The vats will be sitting where I'm sitting. Interesting. Petaluma's starting to become known. This is the home of Lagunitas, which is a very well-known now microbrewer brand.
And Petaluma Hills.
And many others. And where we are in Northern California is becoming, besides being wine country, we're in Sonoma County, is also becoming beer country. And so I think it's probably the smart idea for this company to turn it into a brewery. So we found another place. It's a little smaller. Rent's about the half as much. It'll be studio size will be exactly the same. It's just, but there's a lot of extra space here we don't need, including a 10,000 square foot basement. The only thing that people were using the basement for is camping out.
Sleeping.
Yeah.
We all live.
Yeah. It was kind of our campgrounds. And yeah. And then junk. All of Leo's junk was stored down there.
Is good too.
The junk is gone now. You know, and I feel a weight lifted off my shoulders for that.
7 foot raised floor.
We think of it as a 7 foot raised floor, John says. So now we have a 2 inch raised floor. It's not, but you know, for the wires, it's all you need. Burke won't be sleeping under it, but.
No bean bags.
No bean bags down there. Anyway, and the transition should be seamless for those of you who listen to the show, even those of you who watch, because we're taking my office, the studio, with me. I'm putting it on my back, and I'm carrying it over there. So I guess, let's see, August, the first show we'll do, first radio show we'll do from there will be August 27th. The move is August 21st. But stuff is going to start being packed up bit by bit as we go. So if you do watch the video, you may notice things disappearing. Lights going away, things like that. Anyway, enough about me. What about you? Have you been collecting some calls there, Kim? Who should we talk to?
It seems like Windows 10 might be the theme of the day.
I'm wondering, you know, I was talking with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, who do a podcast for us called Windows Weekly. It's all about Windows. And Paul and Mary Jo were joking, you know, come July 30th, we're going to start getting the calls from people saying, well, where's my free upgrade? I don't know.
They didn't heed your warnings.
I don't know. I tried to warn you.
I made you do mine a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, you did it. How'd it come out?
Well, I mean, it finally happened 2 days later, but
it takes a while.
I haven't even turned that computer on, to be completely honest with you, after the upgrade.
No, you did what one should do, which is any computer you got lying around that's Windows 7, you might as well up. Well, I shouldn't tell people this now because it's too late. But at the time, it made sense because now you have Windows 10. So
right.
If you ever wanted it, you'd have it.
Although my desktop's still on XP, I think.
That we should fix at any cost.
Yet another computer I don't even touch, but it's okay.
Who should I talk to?
Sam in San Diego. He upgraded, and I think he actually had a pretty good experience.
Oh, I would love
to tell you about.
Love to hear about it. Hello, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I'm giving you a big wave. How you doing over there?
I'm good. How you doing down there?
Look,
Ed, I'm so glad that I always listen to you on the weekends, and I've been hesitating about the Windows 10 since it started. Should I do it? Should I not do it? But last Sunday, you got the ball rolling for me when you made that one statement.
Time is running out.
If you are on the fence, get it.
Yeah.
That sold me.
Good.
So I had three computers. Two of them I had no problem downloading.
Yeah.
But one of them I had a problem. It kept coming up. I had to delete 20 gigabytes.
Yeah, you didn't have any room left.
I had no room. So I tried my best for a couple of days. So finally, I ended up calling Windows. Microsoft.
Hello, Windows.
Yeah, so I called up Microsoft, and they gave me the nearby office, which I went down there. And they had to keep it for a day. They still have it because I went down there Thursday. I'm going to pick it up next week. It's all done. And then they're going to sit down with me and guide me through Windows 10.
Hey, isn't that great, Sam? I should have told people that. If you have a local Microsoft store, they were offering to help people if you had any problems at all.
They were you know what gets me? You go in there, they're very happy.
Yeah.
I'm waiting. They said, hey, would you like your coffee? You want a soda? You want water?
I love hearing that, because that means companies are finally sitting up and taking notice that good customer service pays off.
Yes.
See, you're getting on the radio and saying what a great experience you have. That's good for Microsoft.
Well, it's good for you too, Leo, because it wasn't you sitting in that chair waving at everybody and having a good time with us. Never would have done it. Trust me, if you didn't make that statement, if you're on the fence, get it. And that's it. Sold me.
I'm so glad, Sam, and I'm glad it worked out for you. I'm glad Microsoft helped you with that one computer that was, you know, kind of not doing it. And I'm glad it worked out. Let me know, you know, after you've used it for a few weeks, what you think.
Okay, okay.
Thanks, Sam. Great to talk to you. That's nice. You don't get, you know, on this show, you don't get many people saying, I'm happy with my technology. Mostly it's people saying, this thing doesn't work. That's awesome, Sam. Thank you. Avatar, Pomona, California. Hi, Avatar. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for getting my call. You have an excellent show.
Thank you. I hear
it as often as I can get it.
Thank you.
By the way, I wanted to let you know I did buy your Epson 4500 about a year ago.
Yeah?
And it's working very good, and I'm happy with it.
Thank you. Yeah, Epson's our sponsor, one of our sponsors, and I love those Epson printers, yeah. So I'm glad you're happy with it. Hey, Avatar, can you hang on? Because we got to take a break for the bottom of the hour, okay?
Okay, sure.
So when we come back, we will talk to you. I gather you're having a little trouble with getting your pictures from your iPhone, from your iTunes backup. We'll talk about that. Help you out getting that back. Also coming up, Lanny in Atlanta, Nick in Thousand Oaks, Steve in Santa Clarita from St. Cloud, Minnesota, Nathan. Lots of great callers coming up. Yours too, if you want. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We're talking high tech, talking computers and the internet, and on the line right now, Avatar from Pomona, California. Hi, I'm sorry I had to put you on hold there. We had to take a break. Then you know how these things are. What can I do for you?
Well, I have this iPhone, and I uploaded it on the computer on Windows 7. It goes into iTunes, and it just disappears after that. I cannot know. Does it upload the pictures?
No, it doesn't.
Email,
yeah.
Whatever,
so
I have to find it.
So there's iTunes has a backup button. You probably have seen it. If you go to your phone, when you connect the phone, iTunes is the worst. Let's just all agree. Apple has neglected it badly. It's an old program. The user interface is confusing and obscure. Have you been able, Avatar, to go to the page that is your phone? Can you find that?
Well, I'm driving right now. I'm not on.
Okay. No, I don't want you to do it right now. But so if that doesn't ring a bell, maybe not. So the first thing to know is that iTunes will back up your phone. I think it does it automatically, but if it doesn't, there's a backup button. But you have to figure out how to get to the page that shows your connected device. and it's not obvious. There's a little tiny icon in the upper left-hand corner that's your connected device. If you find,
yeah, I know that.
Oh, good. So you figure that part out. Okay, you figure that part out. So once you see that and back it up, here's the deal. On a Macintosh, it backs up everything. In fact, if you choose encrypted backup, there's a little check mark on that window, and choose encrypted backup and give it a password, it'll even back up all your passwords and everything. They only do that if you scramble it because they want to protect your privacy. On Windows, it's a little different. It will not back up your photos. So you need to use a photo program to back it up. Usually when you plug an iPod or an iPhone into a Windows machine, the Windows machine will pop up a thing saying, where do you want the photos to go? And then it will transfer the photos, usually to My Pictures. It may have even done that. So when you get home, check the My Pictures folder. Your photos may already be there. Another thing I would suggest, strongly suggest, on any phone, iPhone or Android phone, is download the free Google Photos app. And I'm not talking about Apple's Photos app. That's fine. That's great. That's excellent. But Apple charges you for backup. You only get a couple of gigs free, and after that, you have to pay. And generally, that's not enough, really, to back up your phone and all your pictures and all the media and everything you want to back up. I pay $2 a month, and I think I get 100 gigabytes, and that's plenty, and you could do that. But even if you do that, you probably should get the free Google Photos app. And this is for Android and iOS. And then go in the settings of the app and turn on photo backup. Google gives you unlimited backup for photos. It doesn't save the original. Apple does. Google will if you tell it to. Then you do also have to pay for storage. But they save such a good quality version of it that I don't find that a problem. It's a JPEG. It's fine. And it'll do that unlimitedly, and it'll do it constantly. Whenever you take a picture, it gets backed up. In fact, good idea, have both of them back it up. There's a button in the Google Photos app, and there's a button in Apple's iPhone settings to delete the local photos. Actually, what you could do with iPhone and Apple Photos is turn on the cloud. What do they call it? The cloud library, photo cloud library. Turn that on, and then the iPhone will automatically manage your photos, taking off the originals, keeping them in the iCloud, which, again, you're paying for the storage. Keep the originals up there, and then use smaller thumbnail versions that are appropriate to the screen size of your phone, saving you space. Apple realized pretty early on that people didn't erase their photos, didn't back them up even. And until recently, the last few years, I know lots of people who, we got calls all the time. My phone's full. What do I do now? I know people who bought new iPhones because their old iPhone was full. This is not an economical strategy. And they also didn't want to delete the photos because that was their life. And the worst thing, of course, if you lose the phone or the phone breaks and you then have no backup and those are your photos and they're gone. So Apple, I think, you know, and Google probably too, said there's got to be a better way. There are now many better ways. If you're an Amazon Prime customer, there's an Amazon Photos app that will back up all your photos for free. If you use Yahoo's Flickr photo sharing site, they will give you 1 terabyte of backup for free. If you use Microsoft's OneDrive, I think they just turned that off, didn't they? They used to give you photo backup for free. I think they just turned that off. But there are plenty of places. I actually bought from Seagate a thing called a Live Drive, LYVE. You put the live software on your computers, on your phones, on your tablets. It automatically backs up to your local Live Drive. If you don't want to keep your photos on the internet, you want to keep them locally, it'll do the same backup thing. And you have kind of a terabyte, you have a ton of storage. And then you also get slideshows and stuff. It's kind of nice. LYVE, that's another way of doing it. But it is really important if you're using a smartphone and that has become your camera to figure out what are you going to do with those photos. A, because if you lose the phone, you've lost the photos. B, because eventually you'll fill up the phone. Then what are you going to do? You have to have a photo backup strategy. And once those photos are backed up to the cloud, and I would say back it up to 2 different places, you know, take advantage of all these different offers, pick 2 you like, take advantage of it. Once you've got it backed up to the cloud, then you can erase them from your phone. and you'll have them on the cloud. I like, you know, Apple's got a nice strategy, even though it's not the cheapest. It's kind of a nice strategy because people don't want to delete their photos. They want to have all those photos so they can show friends and family, oh, look, here's the baby pictures. Oh, here's how you looked 5 years ago, all that stuff. So Apple's strategy is kind of, I think, very consumer friendly. And like a lot of Apple strategies, it's consumer friendly but kind of opaque as to how it works. That's the iCloud photo library. If you go into your iPhone settings and then go to the photos and camera setting page, you can turn that on and read the text. It says automatically upload and store your entire library in iCloud to access photos and videos from all your devices. So what it does is copy small versions onto your iPad, your phone. If you have an Apple TV, you can use it, and your Apple computer, you can use it. And then there's a checkbox below it that says either optimize iPad storage or iPhone storage or download and keep originals. If your phone is low on space, full resolution photos and videos are automatically replaced with optimized versions, small versions, and the full quality originals are still on the cloud. So that way you have kind of the best of both worlds. You still have all your pictures, but they're small. You wouldn't notice this, but they're not the full size, full quality. You still got the full quality in the cloud. The only thing is, you know, if you want enough storage, you're probably going to have to pay a buck or two a month to Apple for the storage. So it's a nice, it's a kind of a nice compromise. Hope that helps, Avatar. You know, and the iTunes issue, all I can say is, please, Apple, we've been begging you for years. Can you just get, you know, spend, they got billions of dollars in the bank, something like $200 billion in cash. Take 0.1% of that. That, even that's too much. Just take, you know, take $10 million. That's the kind of the change in Tim Cook's couch. And hire a team and fix iTunes. Would you please? Because we're suffering out here. We're suffering. And I do, I really like Google's photos. They use artificial intelligence to make it easy to search them. They have some photo editing on there. And it's a good photo sharing. It has a lot of the features of Apple. And that's free, free, free. So, and that could be your second form of backup. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Shake that moneymaker. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. The website, don't forget, is techguylabs.com. It's free. There's no sign up, and I want you to use it as a reference. There's a search right on front. We pick a product of the week. We talk about the tip of the week, but also every show is there. In fact, after the fact, audio and video. So if you miss a show, you can go back and hear it and watch it if you want. And every call, my answer in text, my answer in audio and video. And what I really want you to go back there and do is your comments, your thoughts, your additions. Because I don't want anybody just yelling at the radio, futilely yelling, I know a better. If you got an idea, get to the website and put it in there. Because this, you know, I promise this will be up forever. In 100 years, it'll be an artifact of the digital revolution. But for the next few years, it'll be a useful tool if you have a question. That's what the internet's great for. It's something I encourage everybody to do. We all have something we know. We all have something to offer, right? A point of view, what it's like from where I stand, my area, however tiny of expertise, fly fishing or Pez dispenser collecting or dialects of, you know, rural North Carolina, whatever it is that you know, put it up there and put it on. Don't put it on Facebook. Don't put it on Twitter. That's the bane of our modern times is that, unfortunately, people think that when you put something on a social media, that that's posting it on the internet. It isn't. It's ephemeral. It's like a little wisp. It's like footprints in the sands of time. It will evaporate and it'll go away. What you want to do, and everybody should do this, there are a couple of reasons why, is have a website. Have a website. And, you know, one reason is, who was I telling this to? Oh, my daughter. She's 24. She's been writing papers. She's very proud of. She calls me to read them to me. And I'm proud of her. She's in college. And I said, Abby, when you were born, I registered your name.com It's yours. I want you to start a blog, and you can go to, you know, go to our sponsor, squarespace.com, if you want, but you could also go to wordpress.com. That's free. You go somewhere, create a blog, and put those papers up there. And here's why. First of all, you're adding to the value of the internet. You know, whenever I discover a little tip or trick, I like to post it on my blog so that people can then Google and say, oh, here's a solution. I know I use that all the time. If I have a computer problem, if you have a computer problem, you Google it, and often you'll find somebody else had the same problem and found a solution. But there's another important reason to do it. It's called reputation management. And here's why. It's especially important for young people. If you're a young person, listen to this carefully. If you don't post stuff on the internet and somebody else posts stuff about you on the internet, guess what people find when they Google your name? The other stuff. So you need to be proactive right now. You need to create an internet presence, an online reputation. Create websites, tweets. You can Google, and sometimes they show up, Facebook posts sometimes, but not, like I said, they're temporary. They're little wisps of smoke that are going to blow away. Do something permanent that Google will find so that when somebody searches for your name, they find the good stuff. The stuff you put up. Your track metal. Your A paper. Your great drawing or cartoon or all of the above. I've spoken to high school students and told them this many times. It's very important. High school students, I understand that, you know, kids love Snapchat because it's temporary. You know, they don't want to put footprints on the sands of time. When you're young, that makes sense. Put the stuff you're proud of up. Start creating an internet presence, an internet reputation. And it's I hate to say it, it's defensive, if nothing else, because if somebody, you know, if your buddy posts a picture of you drunk on their blog, you don't want that to be the first thing somebody finds. You want it to be your A paper, your beautiful drawing, your thoughts, your writings. You'll be glad it's there. You know, don't put embarrassing stuff up, because you put the stuff you're proud of up. And that's why I use the term reputation management. You can, there are companies that do this. Don't be fooled by their inexpensive teaser rates. It's tens of thousands of dollars. And you know how they do it? They hire writers to put up posts in your name on a lot of different places, and then they cross-link them, trying to raise the Google rankings. It's bogus stuff. It's not real stuff. The idea is to push down the negative and push up the positive. Well, if you start doing that now, you'll save yourself a lot of grief in the future. Put the good stuff up. And it's Snapchat, it's not Instagram, it's not Twitter, it's not Facebook. Go ahead and use those. But if you post a great picture on Instagram, post it on your website too. And make sure your name is in it, you know, so that people know. So that when they Google your name 10 years from now, when an employer is looking for references, or a father-in-law is looking to find out if you're a suitable date, make sure they find the good stuff. You can do that. It's a great idea. And it's not a bad idea if you've got a newborn to do as I did. I got both my kids' name, .com, so that they would have that. And when I did it, I bought it for 20 years. You can do that. It's expensive. You know, it's 10 bucks a year. Was it 200 bucks? But then because I knew they wouldn't care. And in fact, I've mentioned this before to them. No interest. Now at 24, Abby goes, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I'm glad you have that. Get it now. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, our next call is Nick in Thousand Oaks. Is that right? No, Larry. Larry's next. Sorry, Nick's coming up too. Larry's in Atlanta. He's got a Windows 10 issue because he wants to go back. I want to go back. Take me home. Clicking my heels three times. There's no place like Windows 7. There's no place like Windows 7. You know, one thing that would help our sponsor, Carbonite. Carbonite backs up automatically whenever you're online. So if something does go wrong, and you know things go wrong with computers, maybe you get that idea now if you listen to the show. Things happen. Stuff happens. Carbonite is the antidote. Ever hear of ransomware? That's the 95% of all phishing emails now are ransomware viruses. That's the stuff that encrypts your data. It says if you ever want to see your stuff again, send us $300. Mm-mm, you don't want that to happen. But if you've got Carbonite, you're golden. Carbonite is automatic, continuous backup to the internet where your data is safe and can be recovered anytime, not just on your computer, but on any computer. You log into your Carbonite account or use their free apps. There's your stuff. And it's affordable. Less than $5 a month for everything on your computer, $60 a year. But they have plans for home, but also office, for servers, for businesses. We use it everywhere. You should use it everywhere. Try it free at Carbonite.com. No credit card needed, but do use my name, Leo, so you get 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Use my name, Leo, for 2 months free when you buy. Lanny. I finally got your name right. Sorry, Lanny. Lanny in Atlanta. Hi, Lanny.
Hi. I've been listening to your show on Sundays from 6 to 9 in Atlanta for 3 to 5 years.
Thank you.
First time I've had a problem, and I have other issues I was dealing with, and I didn't get the Windows 10 till Thursday. I downloaded.
You waited to the day before. Good
for
you.
Well,
good for you.
I downloaded it to a Dell laptop, and it gave me a choice that I could pick the time to install Windows 10 all the way to Tuesday the 2nd. I picked Tuesday the 2nd at 11 p.m. But I, on another laptop and a desktop, I was doing it Friday, and one laptop took forever trying to fill the, from going about, 6 or 7 hours going through a 99-minute.
It said 99 minutes, but it took hours.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's an HP, and that's a problem. I think what I found on it, I'm just going to have to erase the computer and reinstall it. But I have a desktop. It's a AMD desktop. It was late, and it got installed, but it went immediately to Windows 10 and installed
good.
It.
Good. That's probably the only one you're going to have a free upgrade for, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
Tuesday.
It finished on the HP and installed it.
Oh, good.
But it's my issue is what you were talking about, how you could put Windows HP on a DVD and go back to Windows 10.
Yeah, you don't even have to put it on a DVD. If you want to go back, go into your recovery control panel and say, roll it back. And you have 31 days from the upgrade to roll it back. It should, if everything goes well. This is why we say get a backup just in case. But if everything goes well, go back to Windows 7. You don't need to worry. Anytime you want to go to Windows 10 now, you can do that. You entitled the machine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Just got a new phone. Kind of a wild card. Out of nowhere. A Chinese company called ZTE. I'm not sure how you feel about the idea of buying a phone from a Chinese manufacturer. I should point out that almost every phone you buy is made in China, including the iPhone, Samsung phones, LG phones made in Korea, South Korea. But this is a Chinese company, ZTE. I don't think they've had any phones in the U.S. market. Get ready, because there are a number of Chinese companies who are going to enter the U.S. market, including Xiaomi, ZTE, and Huawei. We're also going to have to learn how to pronounce these names. ZTE, at least, is easy. It's just three letters. But what's interesting, and there are other companies, Chinese companies from the Republic of China, from Taiwan, like the OnePlus phones. What's interesting is these companies are leveraging years of innovation and manufacturing by the big expensive companies like Samsung and Apple. For years now, Chinese companies have been manufacturing great cameras, fingerprint readers, beautiful screens. And, as you make more and more of these due to the economies of scale, it gets cheaper and cheaper. And so those of you who were spending, like me, $800 a phone getting the high-end iPhones and the high-end Samsung phones. Well, you've empowered a whole new generation of phones that cost half as much and are just as good. It's actually a challenge Samsung and Apple are going to have to face in the next generation of phones. They know this. How do they make their phones better enough to charge twice as much when companies like OnePlus and now ZTE are charging $400 for high-end flagship phones? So I just got the ZTE, and you can buy this online. It's an unlocked phone, which means no carrier tie-in. You could put it on any U.S. carrier. It's the Axon AXON7 from ZTE, and it is a fantastic phone with, as far as I can tell, zero compromises. The fingerprint reader is on the back, kind of like Google does it with their Nexus phones. I like that. It's a good place to put the fingerprint reader because when you hold the phone, it's just a very natural place to put it. An OLED, Super AMOLED screen, as good as anything Samsung makes, and Samsung makes the best screens. Very high resolution. You know, it's quad HD, 528 pixels per inch. That's even better than the iPhone. The camera is 20 megapixels, very fast, f1.8. It's got optical image stabilization built in. The camera application itself has lots of great features, including HDR. The live photo feature that Apple pioneered, it's built in. It's got panoramas. It's got night mode, multi-exposure, time-lapse, and slow-mo. You know, everything you'd expect from a camera application. It's Android, and it's a fairly clean version of Android. It's a very impressive phone. Oh, I didn't mention it has one feature that the iPhone and the Samsung phones lack. It's got front-facing, very powerful, pretty high-quality speakers. And it's capable of playing back high-resolution audio, 192 kilobit by 24-bit audio, which none of the other phones are able to do. So it's kind of I guess they're aiming a little bit at an audiophile audience. But these specs are fantastic. $400, 64 gigabytes of memory, and it supports an SD card. So I added 128 gigs for another $30, and I have kind of virtually, you know, unlimited memory, tons of memory. It also supports, and this is something we don't really care about in the U.S., or maybe we'll start caring about, I don't know, two SIM cards, and you can choose. That's because in many developing nations, India, for example, you have so many carriers that you might just go 10 miles, and it'll be a different carrier. So people often want to put in SIM cards from two different carriers. And I have a feeling for people who travel, or maybe even, you know, it may start to happen in the U.S. if people want to have two different carriers. This phone will automatically switch between them. You can give it rules when to use which carrier and so forth. Battery life is fantastic, phenomenal. Better than anything of this size. It's what is the size screen? I think it's a 5.2-inch screen. But I'm getting, 18-hour battery life. Unless I play Pokemon Go. Of course, all bets are off. So this is the ZTE. It's the company. It's a Chinese company. It's interesting, actually, the design, it's all metal, it's beautiful, I think it's really well made, and it's designed by, it says designed in the U.S. By an affiliate of the BMW, and a really gorgeous design. It's the Axon AXON7, and we'll make it my pick of the week, so you can go to the website at techhighlabs.com and get the link to buy it if you choose to. But if you're in the market for an unlocked Android phone, I can't see any reason at this point to pay twice as much. That's the high-end phones from LG and Samsung and even Motorola and certainly Apple are very expensive compared to this. And I cannot see any reason to buy those phones. It's going to be a very interesting challenge, I think, going forward for Apple and Samsung. What can you do to make your phone worth twice as much? Or maybe you just lower the price. You know, Apple had a good quarter this quarter, partly because the iPhone SE, the lower-cost iPhone, sold so well, much better than the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus, the expensive iPhones. Apple will announce a new iPhone in a couple of months. The current rumor, and I have to stress, rumor, is September 16th. So it's not far off, 6 weeks. We don't know what they'll call it. Let's say they call it the iPhone 7. That would be their normal naming convention, but all bets are off. We don't know. But the iPhone 7, the strong rumor is, will not have a headphone jack. You'll have to buy special headphones with Lightning, either a Lightning connector on it, or I'll use an adapter. Maybe Apple will provide one that goes Lightning to headphone jack. That is not an ideal solution. I'm not sure why Apple would do that, and it certainly is not making the iPhone better. Apple will spin it that way. Oh, it's better because it's better. It's got more digital than ever before, or it's something. But it's, well, maybe they want, you know what, they may back down. They may not do it. It's just a rumor at this point. Although, as we get closer, when you get within a couple of months of an iPhone release, these rumors get more credible because they're making the phone right now in China. Foxconn is manufacturing. They've manufactured tens of millions. So unless Apple's willing to eat all those phones, whatever we're seeing coming out of the leaks from Foxconn from China, that's probably what the phone looks like. I don't know what Apple does. I don't know what Samsung does to start beating. And believe me, this isn't the last. The OnePlus 3 was the first one, $400. Now the ZTE Axon 7. Expect new phones from Xiaomi and Huawei, and a drive to reduce the cost. And this is what's interesting: without reducing functionality. It's good news for us. That's why competition is great. It's very good news for us. Now, Apple really doesn't have any competition if you're determined to use an iPhone. If you want iOS, that's the only place you can get it. And maybe that's what Apple is hoping will preserve its lead and preserve its price point. Well, you got to pay them the money if you want an Apple device. But I think Android is good enough now. I really do. That isn't a strong argument. Sometimes people say, well, I have so much money invested in apps on iOS. You should check. Most of the apps you use are probably free. Well, I bet you most of the apps you use are free. And the few that you use, maybe, what, $10, $20 total? It's not a huge differential to move platforms. What do you think? Thinking about Android if you're an iPhone user? 8888 Ask Leo. Would you never buy a phone from a Chinese company? You worried about spying? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech. Somebody asked in the chat room, is Pokemon still a thing? I think it's still a thing. Everybody around here seems to still be playing it. Waiting for the fad to pass. Maybe it will. Maybe not. I mean, it won't be as crazed as it has been. But there, you know, I'd say half, a third of the people who play it crazily now will continue to play it. I will. It's fun. Not playing it all the time anymore. Nick is on the line. Thousand Oaks, California. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have an uncle who's a contractor, and I do all his IT work. He has over, 15 different classifications and licenses in different states.
Wow.
And, the system he has to represent this work right now is rather simple, just a basic map with thumbnails in it on the wall. So what he wants to do is create a digital map of the United States to show his work. Now, there's three prerequisites for this. One, instead of looking down on it like it's two-dimensional, it has to be a 45-degree view. Okay. Secondly, it has to be interactive. So if you click on California or Texas, they'll pop up with the different classifications or licenses he has for that state. And thirdly, it has to be website compatible. So,
fourthly, you got to write it all in the next couple of days.
Right.
He's not asking much. No.
Sure.
It's funny because people see software. They get used to what computers can do and what the web can do, and they just kind of underestimate the immense skill and labor required to do it. For all those certs your uncle has, it's the same kind of level of skill to do what you're talking about. Here's how I would do it if you want to approach this. Google Maps has an API.
Okay.
So you're never going to get in the – you don't want to buy mapping data.
Right.
That's ridiculously expensive. But Google Earth and Google Maps you can write a layer on top of them and use their features. So that's what I would – And are you a programmer? Have you done anything like this?
I'm just starting to learn C++, so I'm like an infant as far as that goes.
Yeah, it's going to be challenging. This is going to be challenging for you. You'll be using JavaScript and web technologies primarily. You may have to do some Java as well. Google is killing the Google Earth API, which is too bad because that's really what you want. Google Earth has all the things you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But I would investigate. I'm sure they will come up with something to replace it. Or maybe, I mean, they do have a Google Maps API. API, as you probably know, is a programming interface. So if something has an API, you can write code on a website that calls it. So you've probably seen embedded Google Maps with additional information overlaid on top of them. And that's the kind of thing you want to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As far as like the interactiveness goes, you know, if you click on a certain state for it to pop up.
And Google Maps will do that. It'll zoom in. And then a pin can have additional data associated with it. So I think you can do that. The 3D thing is more of a Google Earth thing. That's why I was interested in Google Earth's API. But they may add some of that capability to Google Maps. Somebody in the chat room has given us a good link, at least somewhere to start. It's a tutorial for the Google Maps API. And it's at w3schools.com. W3 is the World Wide Web. So it's a web developer site. And they have a tutorial there on how to, at least will tell you what you'll need to know to do this and what kinds of capabilities it has. Okay. Certainly has, I think, most of the capabilities that you want. You'll be doing it, in JavaScript. You'll be using REST.
Okay.
And so if those terms are familiar to you, then you're a part of the way there anyway.
Yeah, sure.
It's nice because if you had to go out and get the map data, mm-hmm. and all of that, that'd be a pain. I've used it in the past with a couple of generations ago when I did my own website with a map and the radio stations that take this show, an interactive map for that. And it wasn't hard to do that much. So I think you could, in a day or two, get a very simple thing going. Say, mm-hmm. hey, uncle, I'm going to at least give you this much. And we'll work on the 3D zooming and all that stuff later, which would be a map of the relevant areas with pins in it that have information associated when you click the pin, like what certs he has in that area.
Okay.
So I think that you can get, without a lot of effort, I don't think I even used JavaScript. I think it was a database that I can't remember exactly. It was a table or something. You could probably get at least 3/4 of the way there. And then all the fancy cosmetic stuff that he wants, you could say, yeah, uncle, I'll be glad to get that for you. How much you going to pay me? On the other hand, what a great way to, an excuse to learn all this stuff. I like his idea. And I think this really comes from, which is not a bad thing, a sense that we have of, oh, look at that. That's easy. That must be easy to do. Oh, yeah. And then you sit down and as I did, and you hire a web design company and their engineers and you say, okay, guys, this is what I want. How much is that going to cost? And they say, it's going to take 3 weeks or 10 program. It'll be $250,000, please. And that's when you realize this stuff isn't that easy. It's not that easy. It's fun, though. And you know what? If you are a young person and you're thinking, what skills should I learn? That would be a good skill to learn. Web development. There are great job opportunities for designers, web developers, engineers in a lot of areas, network engineers, if you're a security guru, people who understand this technology are at a premium. And there's, I think, a great opportunity there. And here's the other great side. You can learn all this. If you're motivated, you can learn all this online. You don't need to go to a 4-year college. You don't need to pay a technical school. Everything you want to know is available, in many cases, for free online. iTunes University. You should absolutely check that out, iTunes U. They have courses from Stanford, MIT, Yale, free courses. Stanford has a world-renowned course for its students on programming, writing apps for iOS. It includes professors from Stanford and actual developers that work at Apple. They update it every year because the technologies are updating every year, and it's free. There's also paid courseware that you can get. Lots of places you can go, Coursera and Udacity, if you want a certificate or, you know, proof of completion. But these online courses are everywhere. And if you have zero resources, but you have the internet and you have a computer, not even a fancy computer, and most the biggest resource, the will and drive and perseverance to learn, the sky's the limit. It's a great opportunity right now. It's exciting. You don't have to go into hock for $250,000 to a 4-year college to do this. You can learn it yourself right now. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Exceed your vision. Time for our photo guy. Chris Marquardt is here from DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Hello, Chris. Good to see you. I think we have a photo assignment to review, do we not?
We do have a photo assignment to review. It's the slow assignment that has been running for about a month now.
Were people and slow to submit?
Not really. I think we have almost 90 people who submitted something. Yep.
Awesome.
Yep, very good. And lots of different themes in this one. And I've picked three that are kind of similar because they all use something, well, a bit of a technical trick to get their photos done. And they all have to do with slow. The first one that I want to review is by Jose C. Gomez.
I like this.
And so, okay, let me describe this. It's a water faucet with water dripping from it. And you see the water, like streaks of water coming down. But then at the same time, you have a few droplets that are frozen in midair. So that's where you use a slow shutter speed. So you can get those drips of water, kind of make these streaks. And then you use a flash to freeze part of that motion in midair. So it's a combination of two pictures.
Well, you look at it, you wouldn't even know that, but you know because you recognize the technique.
Well, I played with this a while ago, and it's fun to do that. Everyone can actually do this if you have a water faucet in a not very bright room and you use the flash in your camera will automatically do that. It will take a long exposure to brighten the room up, and then it will add the flash in to freeze some of the motion. So it's actually very simple to do. If you just set your camera in automatic mode in a darkish room, have the water faucet drip, and then just take a lot of shots with the flash and try to catch a few good ones.
It looks good. It's a good effect. I'll have to try that. That's neat.
Yeah. The second one by Dan Volkman. that's a composite picture. So
it's the same kid. I thought it was a bunch of kids lining up, but now as I look at it, they're all exactly the same.
So what you see
either they're no nuplets. Oh, there's nine of them.
I don't think that that's the case. So what you see is multiple versions of the same kid running from the right to the left through the picture, slowing down, coming to a stop, and then the same kid turned around in front of that line of kids, holding out a hand saying stop.
So cool. Dan did another thing. He black and white. The background's black and white, but the kid's in color. Yeah.
So what he did, and he writes it in his description, is he took these pictures from a video. So he shot a video and then took single frames and composited them together. So it's the same kid running, slowing down, stopping, and then again the same kid stopping the row of kids. And yeah, he did what we call a color key, which is he took all the color out of the background of the meadow they're on, of the trees, of the sky, so that just all those different versions of the same kid are in color, which kind of really pulls in the attention to that kid. That's very cool. I mean,
that's a neat effect.
That took a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and more than that, it took planning, and this is one thing that I hear photographers talk a lot about. Sometimes they call it pre-visualization, knowing what you're going for before you shoot it.
Yes.
So you know what to do, right? You had to know what you were looking for here.
It helps to have a bit of a story in mind, and then the way to tell that story might become a bit more obvious better than just going through all your pictures and trying to find something.
That's what I do.
Oh, I mean, we all do this from time to time. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of planning it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it helps. And the third one is a bit along the same theme of the first one we looked at. It's by Brendan Burkett, Freezing Time. And so what he did is in this picture, well, what we see in this picture is a street scene. It's at night. In the front, there are parking meters. And then in the background, you see lights and buildings and a streak of light going across the street, which is from a driving car. So it's a long exposure. I think he writes 5 seconds. And then he fired a flash in those 5 seconds, directed at himself. It's pointing at himself. You can actually see the flash in the picture standing on the ground in front of him. And this way he appears in the photo lit up like a ghost, you know. He's translucent because the picture has already been exposed for a few seconds. But he kind of shows up there like a ghostly apparition. And that's a fun kind of trick to do. Take long exposures and then add in an element that is frozen in time. Another thing that he did, which I like, is he used a very small aperture, and that resulted in those pointy light sources in the background to become star streaks. So you see these pointed stars in the background, which gives it a nice kind of touch.
Cool effect. And everything's in perfect crisp focus too as a result.
Yes.
So you know, this is great. And this is kind of an example of why we use Flickr. This would be a classic Flickr photo. You know, Brendan's obviously a young, budding photographer trying out a technique, and he wrote on his post, as actually all three of them did, how he did it, and then soliciting comments. And I think this is a way to learn. What do you think? Is this work? Does this? How do you like it? Do you get what I was going for? That's what's great about Flickr, isn't it?
Works well.
Yeah.
And as a photographer, if you want to find out what he did, he has his what we call EXIF data in there. So if you scroll down a bit, you see what camera was taken with, what aperture he took, how long it was exposed, and what ISO he shot it at. So if you want to learn some of the technical details of the photo, you can usually find out this way too.
Yeah, and he's 509 people have looked at it, 12 people favorited it. He got 2 comments. I mean, that's what's cool about Flickr. Flickr's free, by the way. It's a Yahoo property. Let's hope Verizon continues to keep Flickr going and growing, because it's really a boon for the photography community. As you know, Yahoo was just purchased by Verizon. And it's what we use for our assignments. We have a tech guy group. So if you're not a member of Flickr, go ahead and join it. And then find the group that's called The Tech Guy. You'll know you're in the right place, because it's a pretty darn big group.
It's over 12. It's 12,678 members.
Amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
And lots of photos there. And then you can participate in our next assignment. Not a competition, just for fun. But we need our assignment, Chris Marquardt.
There's a new one, and it's, again, going to run for about a month. And it is fly.
Oh, maybe not.
Well, lots of
maybe
different
not.
There.
Could be, I'm lots flying. What could fly? We don't tell you, even though Leo made a buzzing sound. That's not necessarily what he's talking about. It's just whatever that means to you. So you can upload as many as a picture a week. So go out and the idea is just go out and take pictures. When you find one you think might be a good one, upload it to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Make sure you put fly in the tag information so Chris will know to find it. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will thank you. We'll welcome you to the group if you're not already a member. And in a month or so, Chris is going to go through them all and pick 3 to talk about on the radio once again. Really nice. Some really nice pictures this month. Thank you to
That's
Brendan.
Beautiful and great participation.
And Dan and who did the faucet picture? Jose. Good job, all three of you. And thank you, Chris Marquardt. Chris joins us every week about this time. You can find out more about him, his photography, his books, his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where he resides on the internet, somewhat near Hanover, Germany. What's your next workshop? Where are you going?
I'm going to Greenland on a ship in August.
What fun. Have a great time. Oh, man. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. boom, 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 boom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. 8888, ask Leo. I need a drum core in here. That'd really be great. It's a little rhythm. Nathan on the line from St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hi, Nathan. Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you? This does not sound good. That sounds like a failing cordless phone. Is that what that is? I think it is. I heard a voice in there somewhere, but I'm not sure what's going on. I'm going to put them on hold, I guess. And maybe you can figure out, Kim, and we'll get him back in a second. Lex, Virginia. Hi, Lex.
Hi, Leon. Greetings from the other coast.
Yes. Yes. I love Virginia. Virginia, you know, is for lovers. I hear that.
New bumper sticker.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
Hey, I've bought into your advice to go with Windows Defender and not be stupid.
Good.
You know, self-protection, mm-hmm. according to your advice. Mm-hmm. But I came across a found thumb drive yesterday. Ooh. And I realized I have no means for checking yes. that for viruses.
And in fact, you have no way to know for sure if it's safe at all.
Yeah.
So here's the problem with thumb drives. And we're really starting to tell people do not accept thumb drives from any other source. If you buy one and you buy it from a known retailer and it's a known brand, fine, and use it yourself, fine. But here's the problem. Of course, there can be a virus just on the thumb drive, you know, just put on there by somebody as a file. That's not risky. That's not a concern. You can scan it with your virus scanner and it would find it and you'd be fine. And right. Defender has a scan mode, so you just point it at the thumb drive. That's not the real threat of thumb drives, though. We know something called bad USB was revealed to the world, it's, I think, been almost a couple of years ago. August 2014, exactly 2 years ago. And the problem with bad USB is the firmware on the USB thumb drive can be modified to make it, to give it a payload, a dangerous virus payload that you couldn't scan with a scanner. You couldn't detect ahead of time.
Oh.
So if I were a bad guy, and by the way, it's easy to get the hardware that does this because all, it turns out all USB drives have writable firmware. I think the reason they manufacture them that way is if they detect an error. You know, it's a drive, so it has some circuitry. If they detect an error in the drive's software, they can fix it. But this vulnerability, this ability to burn something dangerous onto that drive that would automatically activate when you put the drive in the slot, was discovered 2 years ago. And to date, not one USB drive manufacturer has modified how this works. They're all still burnable, writable, and vulnerable. And it's because they just economically, they just don't want to change it. And they're just hoping nobody hears about bad USB. So, you know, chances are that drive's fine. Somebody just dropped it out of a backpack and it's usable. But in my opinion, it's not worth the chance you're taking. And given that thumb drives themselves are so cheap, how big is it?
It was a 4 gig, and this one actually has been in the family, and it was full of photographs.
Ah.
But instead of just openly trusting it, I wanted to scan it first, just not knowing the computers in which it had been.
Yeah, you're right. And in most cases, that's okay. It is, in theory, possible to even infect a thumb drive from a computer, but mostly it would be done with a special hardware that you would use to modify the firmware.
Okay.
So I think if you know if you know the provenance of that drive, you know where it's been and who's been using it, you're fine. Just scan it with your Defender if you're worried. And the thing is, it's just data files on there. You're fine.
Now, I couldn't figure out a way to make Defender scan a drive. I didn't think it had that capability, so I can dig a little deeper.
Yeah, you know, they may not expose that capability. Pretty sure it's in there. Maybe that's a reason to buy a third-party antivirus if you can't scan an external drive. Gosh, that would be a flaw. You can at least use Microsoft's malware removal tool to check for common malware. That doesn't have an icon or a link in the menu, but you can start it by just hitting the Windows key and typing MS. Let's see, Microsoft. Oh, I can't remember. I think MSRT. Yeah, that's right. MSRT and hitting return. That'll launch a window that actually is the malicious software removal tool, and or is it MRT? I think they call it MRT, but it's MSRT. Anyway, try which one will work, MRT or MSRT.
Okay.
And you'll get a window, and I think you can use that to scan any drive.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, be worth doing. But as long as it's not, you know, I would. So, for instance, security researchers were kind of shocked when I think it was the Democratic National Committee handed out thumb drives to delegates saying this is unacceptable. It's dangerous, especially given the hacks that you've been subject to already. You shouldn't be doing this. Thumb drives are now dangerous. You do not want to take thumb drives from strangers. It's almost as bad as candy.
Well, that's helpful info. My wife is a teacher and takes one back and forth. We know that where that one always is.
Yeah. Then you're all right. I think you're
the
all right.
Cloud is just safer.
Yeah, it is. And buying a thumb drive is fine. If you want to know more, if you Google bad USB, you'll see you know there's a Wired article, first thing that came up for me, why the security of USB is fundamentally broken. And the sad thing to me is this article was written exactly 2 years ago, July 31st, 2014, and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. The only thing that's changed is we're recommending against passing around USB keys. The malware, bad USB, the Wired reporter writes, can be installed on a USB drive to completely take over a PC, invisibly alter files installed from the memory stick, redirect the user's internet traffic, and because it resides not in the storage portion of USB drives, but in the firmware that controls their functions, it can remain hidden long after the contents of the device's memory would appear to be deleted. In other words, you can wipe the drive and it's not gone. There's no easy fix. And the sad thing is USB key manufacturers have not changed the way this works. You may, if you go out and look around, find a particularly secure USB key that doesn't have writable firmware. By the way, they could easily do that. Just make the firmware unwritable, read-only, and this would go away. But they still haven't. So it is a significant issue, and you shouldn't really trust a USB key unless you know exactly where it came from. Great question, actually. We haven't talked about that in 2 years. It's probably worth mentioning again. Ed in Seal Beach, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ed.
My wife, I know nothing, hardly any. I'm lucky I get on the internet for my email. My wife is a little bit better than that. She likes to download pictures and put them on Facebook. And I just wanted to know your opinion. I was looking at the Mac Air, and I just wanted to know if you thought it was overkill, and I'm looking for reliability. And I understand that that's a particular type of PC. She wants a laptop.
I like MacBooks. But if all you're doing is surfing the internet and uploading pictures to Facebook and that kind of thing, the things most people do, internet and email, then even a MacBook is probably more complicated and more expensive than you need. Because and this has changed over the years. It used to be, you know, when you wanted to buy a computer, desktop or laptop, it was Windows or Mac. That was the choice. But what's changed is you have more choices now, and you don't need to get a general-purpose computer unless you're doing more than the internet and email. So I would at least look at, you'll save a lot of money, and you'll find it's much more secure and much more reliable, something called a Chromebook. Now, the Chromebooks are, you know, they start at $200. A MacBook starts at over $1,000.
Yeah.
A good Chromebook, like the best Chromebook, is about $400 or $500. Dell, Samsung, Acer, and Asus all make excellent Chromebooks. They're very secure. You cannot, for instance, this USB key issue I was talking about, you're protected against it on a Chromebook. A Chromebook, if it detects that the operating system has been modified in any way, will say, no, can't go on. You got to power wash me. And once power washed, the Chromebook is completely re-secured. You don't need an antivirus because no virus is possible. But you can't just run any program you want. You can run one program, the Chrome browser. And Chrome browser has a lot of extensions that will run. Also, coming up in the fall, Google's going to allow Android apps to be installed on these too. So that will give you a broader range of things you can do with it. But I think what you just described, she uses Facebook, she probably reads email. A Chromebook is an excellent choice and about one-tenth the cost of a MacBook. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theaters and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches, virtual reality, automotive engineering, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. If you want to call us, it's toll-free anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can still call via Skype or some other voice over the internet thing. I know we have a lot of listeners all over the world. We get calls from time to time from countries all over the map. So give us a ring, 888-827-5536, and we can talk high tech. I recommend Chromebooks all the time, and if you want to spend $1,200 and you want to get a MacBook Air, you should. They're beautiful. They're works of art. They're gorgeous screens. Actually, the Air is a little bit low resolution. I'm hoping that they're going to release a higher resolution MacBook Air, what Apple calls a Retina display MacBook Air, sometime this year. They do have Retina displays on their MacBook Pros, and their MacBook, just the MacBook, has a Retina display. But they haven't updated those MacBook Airs. They're so light. They're so thin. And they were such a success that Intel copied it, dubbed it the Ultrabook, basically cloned the design. And everybody who makes PCs and Windows PCs makes clones of the Apple hardware. I have here, this is the very beautiful HP Spectre, a 13-inch Windows notebook that's, you know, pretty much a clone of the MacBook. Apple's hardware designs are gorgeous. And they, you know, I think Macintosh is an excellent operating system. It's less of a target, so it's less likely to bog down with malware and spyware, although not immune by any means. It's just less of a target. And so bad guys go where the money is, as Willie Sutton used to say. And it's not only banks, it's also Windows PCs. But a Chromebook is a much simpler device. If you want to see what it would be like to use a Chromebook, just limit yourself to using the Chrome operating system. I mean, the Chrome browser all the time. Don't use the menus. Don't use the start menu. Don't use the Apple menu. Just use the Chrome browser. Do what you can do in the Chrome browser. Install extensions if you want. There are lots of them for reading PDFs, for password wallets, you know, for video and photo editing, for music. There's tons of stuff. But it just they're not applications you install in the operating system. You install them on the browser. And if you feel comfortable doing the things you do, the internet, email in the Chrome browser, then a Chromebook might be a good choice for you. They start as low as $150. Even the fancy Chromebooks are usually under $500. My recommendation is to get one with the fastest processor you can find. Most of them have kind of slower Atom processors or Celeron processors, sometimes ARM processors. If you can get an Intel i3 Duo, get 4 gigabytes of RAM. More if you can find it. Storage isn't as critical because, and this is the drawback I should point out to Chromebooks, they store your data online. They don't store your data locally in most cases. And that means a Chromebook isn't very useful if you don't have a persistent internet connection. But nowadays, Wi-Fi is everywhere. It's at home, I'm sure. It's at work, for sure. Probably the coffee shops and restaurants you go to, you can get online too. So a Chromebook is for many people, you know, that's not a limitation that it requires the internet. And the fact that your data is stored in the internet's a good thing. Remember, I mentioned that power washing. If something goes wrong on a Chromebook, something stops working, or you get somehow get a security issue, which I don't think you will, but if you did, there's a setting that says power wash it, and it'll bring it back to factory state. You don't need a disk. You don't need anything. In fact, most Chromebooks don't even have disk drives or any way to put a disk in. You restore it to factory state. And because your data is stored not on the Chromebook but in the cloud, it doesn't matter. You didn't lose anything. You just log into your Google account and everything's back the way it was. All your extensions reload. All your data is there on the Google Drive and you're good. Most Chromebooks come with 100 gigabytes of Google Drive storage, by the way, so there's ample storage in the cloud for you. I'm looking at an Acer aluminum Chromebook that's probably, in many respects, kind of similar to a MacBook Air. You know, aluminum form factor, 14-inch screen. You can get bigger. You can get desktops. They often call them Chrome boxes, but most people want a laptop. This one has a Celeron 1.6 gigahertz processor, 4 gigs of RAM, a 1920 by 1080 14-inch display, 12 hours battery life. That's another benefit of a Chromebook. They last a long time because they're not doing as much, right? I'd like to see one with a touch screen, especially if you think the Android App Store, which is coming in this fall, will be something you'll want. Then you'll want to have a touch screen. This one does not have a touch screen. $299 for, and what to many people would look just like a MacBook Air. They'd say, "Oh, you have a MacBook Air," and you'd say, "No, no, it's a little less expensive. It's one quarter the cost, but it's a Chromebook, more secure, simpler. We don't really need." I think the general purpose operating systems. We had to buy those in the old days. But nowadays we don't need to. I'm very bullish on the idea of, unless you know you're going to be, you know, doing something that needs Lightroom or Photoshop or some 3D design software or a video editing program, something like that. I think a Chromebook's a good choice. A very good choice. And you know what? You break it. You can buy another one and another one and another one again and still spend less than you just spend on one MacBook. Ja'Kai on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Ja'Kai.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. You're our second caller from Atlanta. I guess lots of people listening to WGST there. Great station. Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
No problem. So about a month ago, I built an awesome computer. It has a i7 4770K.
Nice.
SSD.
So you're the opposite of a Chromebook. You're the opposite of a Chromebook guy. You spend a lot of money and a lot of energy and a lot of time to build your own super heavy duty computer. I would guess you're a gamer.
Yeah, and it's also a video editing machine. So
yeah, you need that, right? Yeah.
Anyways, so couple of weeks ago, something started happening with it where my icons just start disappearing for whatever reason.
Windows 10?
Yeah. Like the icons for like my video files and various folders, they wouldn't load. They're just blank.
Yeah.
It's not broken. They're just blank. So I tried clearing the icon cache.
That's the first thing. But so this is why I asked if it's Windows 10. In the older versions of Windows, that's what you did. You cleared the icon cache, and everything got better. That didn't work.
Yeah. No. And it only seems to happen after the computer's been on for a few hours or I put it to sleep. I'm halfway wondering if, you know, my hard drives are failing, and I'm like, I don't know what to
do.
Now,
you know that there is a setting to hide desktop icons, but you didn't do that, right?
No. It's in the folders.
It's not just everything. The desktop. It's like, folder icons. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the folders. Even like the start bar, the icons start disappearing on that.
Do you have multiple monitors on it?
I do.
Oh. So sometimes the desktop says, oh, you don't need me over here. You need me over there. Try unplugging the second monitor just see if everything's normal again.
Yeah, I would think that, but at the moment, I only have one monitor hooked up. So,
and it's still doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just throwing spaghetti up against the wall to see if it sticks.
Is there any way to check whether my hard drives are healthy or not, or like I don't know. It's like,
yeah, hang on for a sec because we got to take a break, but I'll get right back to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. See, if you had a Chromebook, you could do a power wash and everything would be okay. So, yeah, but you're right to think of the hard drive. At this point, I have to think that something got corrupted. Doesn't mean the hard drive's failing or anything. I mean, you know, if you think about it, data, you flip one bit in a program, everything gets kerfluggered.
Right.
It's just, you know, bits flip all the time on hard drives. But most of the time, a hard drive, you know, most of the area is not used, or it gets flipped in an area that doesn't matter. Right. But if it gets flipped in a critical area, it could do everything. So, golly, I don't really know.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like I have a folder with like a ton of media files in there. And then as soon as I click into the folder and it tries to slowly load the icons over, then everything just kind of, I don't know. It's like, and when I click, and it's not like the files itself are corrupted or anything, because I click on them and they're fine. Yeah. There's no issues, you know, like playing any of the files here. So it's like, it's just the icons. It's like, it's the way it's loading in the icons.
I'm looking at a thread on a Windows 10 forum that gives you, this is apparently not an unusual problem. Try this. It sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But go to your system settings and go into tablet mode.
Okay.
Turn the button. I think there's a hide icons and unhide them. And then go back to desktop mode. And a number of people in this forum are saying, oh, yeah, that fixed the problem. Settings,
tablet.
Okay.
Yeah, I see it.
Turn on tablet mode. And then I think once you're in tablet mode, let me see. I'm looking at make Windows more touch-friendly. Turn that on and off again.
Okay.
And then hide icons on the taskbar on and off again. Or off and on again, I guess. Just the idea is to kind of reset, think again, think, and then see if that fixes it. That sounds weird, but I'm seeing people say that helps.
Okay.
It's kind of a weird one, but this would be a very typical Windows 10 kind of messed up.
Yeah. And then I do it, and
nothing.
Even more. Yeah, it's nothing. Like, yeah, I don't even see... I don't know.
How frustrating! It wouldn't be a. I'm looking at the chat room now to see if they have any suggestions. It wouldn't be a video driver issue, I wouldn't think. It sounds like. Do you have a lot of files in these folders?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
That's maybe what it sounds like. The issue might be because it caches these. Has to cache these icons, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you would see it draw.
Right.
So,
is there any way to just kind of like I've tried subdividing?
But you cleared the icon, the shell icon cache, right?
Yeah.
I would even just delete it, right? Just delete it.
Mm-hmm.
Have it rebuild it, and when you do that, you're gonna see why you have a cache because it's gonna do. But it should after that. It may be just corrupt cache, really.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of. You have a lot of files in there.
Yeah.
It's choking.
Yeah.
The file system's choking, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is, Windows.
Yeah, I know. I was just really worried if I should, do a massive backup and
then
reinstall. And
did you install as an upgrade?
No.
You did a clean install, theater, that's right.
A clean install, yeah.
You got me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll keep listening. If somebody calls in, we'll put them on the air. Thank you, Ja'Kai. Ask Leo. Talk to Ja'Kai a little bit off the air. This is, if you build your own computer, it's great fun. Love it. You probably don't save money, but at least you get exactly what you want. You also get the thrill and pleasure of supporting yourself because who are you going to call? You don't know. Are you going to call the guy who made the hard drive, the guy who made the motherboard, the guy who made the video card, the guy who made the monitor, the guy who made the keyboard? You don't know. It's all different people. When you buy a computer from HP or Dell, you call HP or Dell. When you build your own computer, you're the last line of defense. The bug stops here. And that's part of the fun, too. I mean, it's a great way to learn about computers. So we talked a little bit about possible... fixes I've seen online, weird fixes like turn on tablet mode and turn it back off again. course, deleting the icon cache. He said he has a lot of icons in that folder. That could be why the icons aren't showing up. There's too many, and the icon cache got damaged. So delete it. I don't know of any other fixes, but if you've got some ideas, techguylabs.com, the website. Go on there. Hour three for the episode 1,310. We divide the website into episodes, and then each episode into the hour, and then even each hour into the caller. So you can drill right down and find Ja'Kai and give him your thoughts. No sign up, no fee. Don't want your email address. It's just there for all of us to help each other. TechGuyLabs.com. Bernardo in the Tri-Cities area of Washington State. Hello, Bernardo.
Mr. Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. I have a question regarding, I recently changed my cable provider, I mean my phone provider, and I got the combo with the TV, internet, and phone service.
You got the triple play, baby.
The triple play spectrum from Charter.
And so how do you like it?
It's pretty good.
Good.
I like the feature that has the TV net. It has only like right now 100, like 75 channels online. I can watch it anywhere. In fact, I recently bought a TV, a Roku TV. I don't have to have the unit, but I do have 75 channels from a Spectrum app.
Good.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah.
So you don't have. It's not like cable TV. You're using the internet for all your TV.
For right now, yeah, I canceled the two old TVs. They had to have that coaxial.
That's
cable.
Nice. That's nice.
And it's pretty nice in the end. Yeah. Plus, they have a lot of HDMI.
I think this may be the future. I just bought a new car, a Tesla, and it doesn't even have an the radio stations don't listen. It doesn't even have an AM radio in it. It has a full-time internet connection,
They
encourage you to use Slacker and other internet and TuneIn radio for your radio. They want you to listen on the internet.
That's all it is in the internet now.
I think that's the future.
But the funny thing now is that every now and then I have to send information via fax.
So what?
I know. We're in this day and age.
I know.
Some places they still want us to fax.
You know, and they want you. And you know why? Because they want to see your signature. Like, that's proof that you are who you said you are.
Even though you can do it in a PDF file.
Yeah. I basically use a rubber stamp in my PDF program to put my signature on it. It's the same one every time. But they're happy because they got it by fax.
Right. So this is my question. I even tried to tweak the modem, see if I was able to do it. But I guess the data, the voice internet protocol.
Yeah. If it's not a fax modem, it won't do it.
Oh, no, there's no way.
No, so what you have to do is subscribe to a fax service. So there are online services like JFax that you subscribe to, or sometimes it wouldn't probably, if you only send it once in a while, it'd be better just to pay as you go. But
right.
You can, in effect, you're going to upload the PDF, and they
correct.
Send it as a fax.
Yeah, it's exactly what, you know, they should do, you know, we should have that. Sort of app now.
Cool. I use eFax. eFax, you pay, I'm sorry to say, a fairly high rate if you want to subscribe. I think I pay $15 a month or something.
One of the things that I try to avoid to have.
I know, but there are free faxing services, and there are pay-as-you-go faxing services.
Okay.
So that's what you want to do. Your modem is not a fax modem anymore. Those days are long gone.
Right.
Who
right.
has a fax machine? Remember the curly paper?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
It's so ancient. It's hard to believe. So there are free faxing services. If you Google it, there's FaxZero and MyFax.com. In the long run, they want you to sign up for a paid service, but there are ways to send it. And if you only need to send them once in a while,
right.
That's fine.
Yeah, at first I thought it was going to be some sort of kind of tweak solution and say, I got everything still, even though I'm paid. I don't need a phone. Really, I don't need a phone service.
No, we don't even need phones anymore. You use Skype, voice over the internet. I mean, everything is going to the internet, right? And so it makes sense. Don't get a fax machine. I guess you could still get them at Staples if you went, but why? What are you going to do with it?
The thing is, in order to get the discount for the cable, you know how much they take off if I want to take the phone service out of my package? Two daughters.
Yeah, right. Because they want that monthly $100 a month. They're going to figure out a way to get it out of you one way or the other.
Right.
So if you eliminate TV and you eliminate phone, they just make sure that you're paying a lot for the internet because they know that's what's happening. That's the future. Nobody's going to pay for TV. Nobody's going to pay for phone. It's all going to be over the internet. So the cable companies have been gradually raising the rates because they know they still want that $100 a month. They're going to get you $60 to $100 a month no matter what. There's no way to get away from it.
And I cannot wait until the TV over the internet, it'd be kind of awesome. But,
well, you actually, believe it or not, you are already getting that. That's what they're giving you.
The funny thing is, they give you so many channels, but if I want to have all the channels that I want to package without have a cable service just over the internet, they say, no, you have to have a subscription. So it's crazy. They want our money one way or the other.
Well, and just to everybody needs to understand, we're in a transitional time in every respect. The internet is new. This digital technology is relatively new, and it's changing everything. And you're seeing it in front of your eyes. And the problem is the people who live through the change are the ones who suffer. Once it's all done in 20 years, everything will be great, right? But but we're going to live through a rocky time. Look at the record industry. It's just the television is in the middle of it right now. Look how Twitter has influenced the national elections, right?
It's true.
I mean, I remember when Twitter started, I was one of the first people using Twitter back in 2006. And it was just like this little throwaway thing. It's influencing elections now. It is.
Exactly.
People are talking about Twitter more than they talk about the New York Times or CBS. It's like, the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Yes, we are. Thank you, Bernardo. Yeah, I think the one everybody in the chat room seems to like is FaxZero.com. That's free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Johnny Jet.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
Great to see you. You're home.
I am. Just got in, landed after midnight last night. I was in Connecticut for my sister's threw a baby shower for my wife.
I heard about that. How fun is that?
That's why I couldn't call in yesterday.
So
it was
last
in the
week,
smack middle.
You were having a Mall of America baby shower in Minnesota.
Yes, she's done it all around the country.
How many baby showers?
Toronto. She did one in Toronto. She did a baby moon in Hawaii. Baby moon in Big Sur.
So how many car seats do you have now?
Actually, I don't think we have any.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's no good. I bet you have a lot of boxes of Pampers lying around, though.
Not yet.
Well, what kind of baby shower are you going to? What are they giving you?
You know what? They mailed it all to the house.
Oh, so you'll get it. Okay.
So I haven't picked it up. Yeah. It's at the post office.
Wow. You're going to have a baby shower in every continent.
That'd be nice. Actually, my travels are slowing down.
Yeah, this is it.
I'm not going international for the next few months.
So your wife's due in October.
Early October.
So, yeah, this is it. You're down down to the wire, my friend.
That's right.
So, and as somebody told me, and I didn't believe him, and I'm going to tell you, you're walking through a door that will change your life forever.
I've heard it from so many people.
Yeah. That's exciting. You're going to be a great dad.
I hope so.
Happy for you. However,
so,
you must still join us.
Last night was Natalie's last flight, long flight. And so, you know, she's pretty pregnant. I want to make sure that she was comfortable. So it was the first time I actually really splurged on a business class ticket.
Wow.
And one reason why I did it was because we flew on a Saturday night. I found a fare that was under $200 more than a coach fare.
Wow.
And we flew nonstop on a lie-flat seat. So one of my tips today, and it's actually –
Did you go on Mint? Website.
No, I would have, but I needed my American miles because I'm executive platinum on American. And, you know, you need to fly at least 100,000 miles, and I'm now one round trip away.
Oh, wow.
But so I needed that. Once I get this over, if I do, hopefully before December, I should. I would then start flying JetBlue. But I was just looking up the JetBlue Mint. They're the reason, big reason why these flights are so cheap. American normally sells that seat for $1,200 in advance one way, and then 2 days before I looked, and it was $2,200. Sorry. So, but the secret is that if you want to fly up front and comfortable, do it in advance. And book it usually on a Saturday night when business travelers are not flying, or even on a Saturday. But there's also a website that you can go to called firstclassflyer.com, and you spell flyer with a Y. So this has been around as long as my website. It's a newsletter, actually. So you have to pay for the information. But if you are willing to pay for, a first class seat, this guy can show you how to get incredible deals. The newsletter starts at like $97 a year. And full disclosure, he gives me a free subscription. He has since day one. I met him at a conference. Really nice guy. But he has over 130,000 subscribers. So people are doing it.
How much a year?
$97.
$100 times 130,000. He's doing pretty good.
Well, it says over 130,000 subscribers. So I don't know if that was at one time current.
That's a good amount of money there.
I assume it's over time,
Yeah. Wow, good for him. Well, you know what? It would be worth $100 if you got one great fare, which you did, right?
Exactly. And this guy is a big guy. I mean, he's tall, and he used to be a minor league pitcher for, I think, the Royals. And so he had to travel a lot, and he couldn't fit in a coach seat, even back then when the seats weren't so cramped. So he had to figure out ways how to fly cheap, and that's what he does share. And, I mean, that's what I try and do, too. And there's a lot of websites out there that give you free information, but his is pretty much the creme de la creme.
FirstClassFlyer.com. Exactly.
And I just tweeted it. I CC'd you. And also my next actually, this one's a product. So I was going to mention it last week. I had it in my notes. Last week I came back in – I was in Stockholm, Sweden for a conference. And these guys were there, and they're cruising around the conference on these carry-on bags with motors. So if you go to Motobag, M-O-D-O-B-A-G –
we talked about this with Dick DiBartolo yesterday, and I thought, there is no way the airport is going to let you ride around on a motorized scooter.
I was thinking the same thing, and I actually wrote that in my post when I wrote it a couple weeks ago, saying, I don't know if they're going to allow it. They don't allow hoverboards.
Would you buy this?
This thing is pretty damn cool.
It's
I
cool.
wrote it, and actually, I just should have tweeted a link that has a video of me cruising around.
You wrote it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It goes about 8 miles an hour, and it turns really well. I don't know if I would carry it because I travel with carry-on only, and this thing would be just – it wouldn't carry all my stuff that I need.
It does fit in the overhead compartment, and they say that the engine and the batteries only take about 15% of the total space. So you're getting a carry-on. It's a heavy carry-on. You have to add some weight for the – batteries and everything, but I love the idea that you could sit on your luggage as a memory foam seat.
Without a doubt, I was watching these guys cruise through the conference center and then go out the door and go to the airport, the train station right across the street, and all the Swedes were just looking at them like, what is this?
And it can only be a matter of time before these things are banned from airports.
I would think so, so they were doing a crowdfund and they were trying to raise $50,000. And they're already at $228,000, and they're
everybody
still
wants
days.
One. Everybody wants one. It's on Indiegogo. Search for MODO BAG, the world's first motorized rideable luggage.
Yes, and it weighs 19 pounds.
Crazy. Before you put anything in it.
Yes.
$1,000, by the way. Did we mention $1,000?
That's in advance. If you don't buy it in advance, it's more.
Oh, my goodness. They do have lots of video of people riding around the train stations and the airports. You look kind of dopey. I don't know. How'd you feel doing it? Did you feel a little silly?
No, they have little pedals. I felt pretty cool. Like, man, but going through an airport, I mean, that's a whole different story. I'm at a conference center, so.
Somebody said it looks like a Saturday Night Live skit. It doesn't look completely serious. Moto bag. Yep. And all of this, you should follow Johnny on Twitter because he's tweeting all the time great stuff. And I think you'll be tweeting even more now that you're going to be spending some time at home.
I'm going to be home, so I got plenty. And if we have time, I either have an app or I have a good travel tip.
We got a minute. Go ahead. A couple of minutes.
All right. So here's a basic travel tip that, I flew back with my dad as well last night. And he's always losing his glasses. So, and I see this all around the world. People aren't bringing their glasses.
No.
A backup pair. Bring extra glasses because if you lose them, you're screwed.
I have an extra back. I put it in my DOP kit, my razor kit, just an extra kind of junky pair of glasses from when I got my new glasses. I keep the old ones in there. Because you're right. If I lost my glasses, that whole trip to Europe is going to be very blurry.
But you'd be shocked how many people – I get emails from people saying, I don't know why I didn't do it.
Oh.
It's basic, and also, you know, don't put it in your check bag
I carry it with me. Yeah.
As well as medicines and anything valuable. Ever put anything valuable in a check bag.
Yeah.
And yesterday you should have seen the check bags we had. We don't normally check bags, but since Natalie had all this baby stuff from Toronto.
Get used to it, buddy boy.
Oh, my God. It was like body bags.
You're going to be gate checking a baby seat. You're going to have a diaper bag. You're going to have checked luggage. You're going to look like a crazy person for the next 4 or 5 years, and you're going to love every minute of it. Follow Johnny Jett on the internet. At Johnny Jett is his Twitter account. He's also on Instagram. And, of course, you've got to go to the webpage, johnnyjett.com, and sign up for his Travel Deals newsletter. It's unlike that other one. It's free.
That's right.
Maybe you should start thinking $100 a month, you know? I mean,
that's not a month. That's
a year. $100 a year. That's still $1.3 million a year the guy's making for a newsletter.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to call him up, so you better give me some money.
You sold a few extra. Thank you, Johnny. We'll talk again next week. All the best to Natalie, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to Chi-Town Deke in the city of the broad shoulders, Chicago. Hey, Chi-Town Deke. I like your nickname. Are you there? He blew away in the Windy City. Let's say hi to Rick in Santa Ana. Hi, Rick. Oh,
hey, Leo.
Yeah, they're good. Oh, whew. Hey, Rick, how are you?
Very good. I'm starstruck already.
Oh, wow. Is there somebody famous in the room?
I got to talk to the beautiful and gracious Kim, the phone ranger.
She's awesome. Yeah, Kim's great.
First-time caller.
Welcome.
And I represent probably a fair segment of your listeners being, I have no technical skills and I'm a senior citizen.
But you know what? That's what I'm here for, right?
Exactly. And that's why I listen every week.
Good.
Inspired to call you by my granddaughter, Faye.
Aww.
And I'd like to ask you a question if I can.
Sure, please do.
Okay, so 1:57 a.m., I'm a senior citizen, I'm asleep already. My cell phone gets a text message. And about 15 seconds later, sends a text message with a YouTube.
So the person who sent you the original text message instantly in the middle of the night received a text message back, and they're sure it was from you, and it had a link to a YouTube video.
Yes. So I went to the Apple Store and spoke to a genius, and they said, that's impossible.
Well, it is under normal circumstances. The phone's not going to just decide to send a YouTube video. It's not that smart. So what was the video of, just out of curiosity?
I don't know. It was my friend that got it. I said, just delete it because I didn't send it. The other strange thing that was is that although I do like to look at YouTube, the YouTube that was up, I didn't pull up, and it was a YouTube video about cell phones being hacked.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So the video was a video of phone hacking.
Right.
I would say this would be a good time to erase your phone and start over.
Okay.
Why take a chance? I don't know of any. The Apple Store is saying it's impossible because there, to my knowledge, is no way to do this. However, there is a known iPhone exploit. It wasn't just iPhone, by the way. It was the iPhone, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and Mac OS X that Apple sent out a patch for a couple of weeks ago. This exploit could be triggered by sending you a specially crafted image to your Apple Messages. Messages renders the image, and in rendering it, lets somebody take over your phone. So I don't know that that's what happened, but let's put it this way. It is not impossible.
Okay.
And the fact that whoever did this then sent a video to your friend about hacking phones,
mm-hmm.
that's a little suspicious.
Yes.
No harm in wiping the phone. Might as well do it, right?
Okay.
And you'll just re-download the apps, and that should wipe out anything. And the other thing to do, and anybody listening should do this as well, Apple fixed that problem, but it wouldn't be fixed if you didn't update the phone. So just remember, always vital, Rick, that when you see an update available for your iPhone, your iPad, your Apple TV, your Apple Watch, or any computing device, always do the update right away.
Okay.
Because when those updates come out, it's in a way, it's a message to bad guys. Hey, there's a problem here. And they sit up and take notice. And it doesn't take them very long to figure out what that fix fixed and start taking advantage of it. So make sure you do those updates. I mean, that's one possibility. Maybe there's something else out there. And it may be your granddaughter snuck into the room in the middle of the night.
She was asleep.
You could be being punked. I mean, let's not eliminate the possibility. But the nice thing is you go into the settings on the iPhone, you erase the iPhone back down to scratch, you reinstall your apps, you're going to log into all your accounts, so all your emails still be there, your calendar, your address books, all of that stuff synchronized to the cloud anyway. So it's a little bit of time you'll spend, but you're not going to lose any data. Make sure you back up before you do that, though, okay? Connect it to a computer, run iTunes, and tell it to back up everything, just so you have it all.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's probably, I'll be honest with you, if it happens again, the other thing to consider is not that your phone is hacked, but that your number has been cloned. And that is another kind of hacking that is, I'm sorry to say, possible. I'm not going to say prevalent, but it does happen. And it's one of the reasons just this week, the NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Time, government organization that, among other things, recommends security policies, said we should no longer use text messages for second-factor authentication. You know, when you log into your bank, you'll enter the password, and you can set it up, and I have it set up this way, that the bank then sends you a text message with a 6-digit code that you enter verifying your identity. That's thought to be more secure. NIST is now saying banks and other institutions do not use this method because it's easy to hack the phone system itself. So hard to hack an iPhone, possible, but hard. Not so hard to hack the cell phone system. Somebody may have cloned your number and is receiving texts you get and sending them. The other thing, and this may be even the most likely, and I've seen this happen. In fact, it's happened to me. It's happened to my wife. Make sure no one else is using your iCloud credentials. You know, you have an Apple login, and it's possible, we found this out to our chagrin, my wife set my father-in-law up with a new iPhone, actually her old iPhone, because he doesn't have a cell phone, and she, for convenience, logged him into her account. Unbeknownst to us, for the last 6 months, he's been getting every single text she sends, and I send. And her sister said, you know, Dad's getting all your texts. He's been getting them for months. We changed the account. Same thing for me. I was getting all my son's texts from college. It was entertaining, but I told him immediately. It wasn't that entertaining. So that may even be the most likely scenario, especially if you're not used to this. Don't share your iTunes account, your Apple account, with anybody, because it's possible to have multiple phones get and send text messages on your behalf if they're using the same credentials. Maybe your granddaughter. Does she have an iPhone? Hope she's not using your account. Hope you're not using her account. I'm out of time. I hate it that happens. Can I do another show maybe next week? What do you say? Would you allow me into your home once more time? Please. And thank you to Nathan Staten, our musical director, to Kim Schaffer, who's been answering the phones and doing a great job. Most of all, thanks to you for joining us. I hope you learned something. Hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you'll come back for more. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Don't forget our website, techguylabs.com. Everything we talk about is linked there. It's free, no sign up. It's just a public resource, techguylabs.com. Hey, have a great Geek Week. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.